All right. Good morning, good morning, good morning. If you could find your way back to your seat, that would be great. So good to be with you. If I have not met you, my name is Wally. I am the teaching pastor here, and it's a gift to be together. Thrilled to be with you all. Thrilled that you could gather and we could spend this time together. We're going to sink into our teaching time. We have, if you are new or newer, we have since the first of the year been going through the book of Genesis. So we have been jogging through Genesis because it's been a bit brisk to be able to get through it, but it's been a lot of fun. We have now come to the place, we've broken Genesis down into all these kind of sub-series, these, what we would say, mini-series, based on the characters in many ways in the scriptures. And so we've been able to do these little pockets of themes that run through the series. And we are currently on the person of Joseph. So Joseph, one of 12 sons of Jacob. And so we've been focusing on his life. He tends to get a lot of press because he goes beyond the scriptures. A lot of people know Joseph from his Technicolor Dream musical. So it kind of has landed further out. So we're trying to piece all of this together as we move through his story. I'm hoping to tie some clouds together all the more with his story this morning. So that will be fun. I would love to say a word of prayer, and we've got a lot of work to do. We have so much fun, so much, yeah, it's very different this morning that we have a lot of work to do, and having fun within this thing, again, just completely off to the left field. We usually are really, really bored. I'd love to say a word of prayer, and then it's a giddy up. Gracious God, I bless you for the gift of gathering, the gift of coming together as your body, the church, and that we can spend this time listening in some unique ways, listening to what you have for us as a community, as families, and as individuals, the way in which you are speaking. We gather in a way of bringing our voices together in one through song, which is a bit unique. And then opening up the scriptures and just gathering around and listening to the wisdom and the lives that have been unfolding for many, many, many years. And what that can look like and how that can help shape and move our lives here today. So God, my prayer as the psalmist says, may the posture and meditation of my heart and the words of my mouth bring honor and glory to you and you alone, our rock, redeemer, and savior. Amen. Amen. Okay, so last week, within the Joseph story, we had a conversation around the whole idea of forging of character. How is it that character is formed? And in Joseph, what did that look like? Specifically around the virtues of faithfulness and patience. And how did we get there? How did Joseph get there? What does that look like for us? We utilized the flannel board. So if you are newer to church land, this was really popular for a number of years, the good old flannel board, flannel graph, however you like to look at it. So we looked at Joseph. So we have Joseph here, a young feller. And then you have his special colorful coat we put up there too. Then there is other coat because he actually has several coats he wears within his story. And so we wanted to have that representation. We had the little staff that actually goes to his brother Judah. And we had a little detour we called an uncomfortable commercial break or kind of an idea when we looked at the life of Judah for a moment. Now we have Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. He has jumped in last week, coming in this week. Joseph's brothers, so that's who we have represented here. And we have a few other characters we'll add today to our wonderful flannel board, if you will. And last week we looked at the documentary on Netflix, Quarterback. It's called Quarterback, and it looked at these... it's a documentary on three NFL quarterbacks, and we kind of walked through that because we saw how, in many ways, the way in which those three quarterbacks in their profession and in their lives and how they were kind of moving forward in the midst of ups and downs of life, ups and downs of their career, all of that, we saw how that was tying in to this life of Joseph. Now, this morning, what we're going to do is we're going to go after some meaning as it pertains to dreams. Dreams. We all have dreams when we sleep, some while we're awake, some right now are in the midst of dreams. Hello. Welcome. But we're going to look at what some meaning in dreams, and then more so we're going to wrestle with the questions, though, that might come from this is, does God still speak today the way God seemed to speak to Joseph? And then how do we listen or pay attention if God is speaking? Now, as we're going to jog through chapters 40 and 41 of Genesis, we're going to peer into the dreams of a professional wine server and a baker, the king of Egypt, who is known as Pharaoh. So to set some context for where we'll be, we're going to quickly look at a text from last week just that reminds us where we left off with Joseph, where he was. He was in prison, but then right towards the end of 39, he was put in charge of those he is in prison with to care for them and to take care of them. So we'll look back at Genesis 39:23 to kind of set where it was coming from so we can move into where we are. The chief jailer, where Joseph was, paid no heed to anything that was in Joseph's care because he put Joseph in charge of them because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. Whatever was put in charge of Joseph seemed to do well, seemed to prosper because of what God is doing in and through Joseph. But it's really important that we know it's not in spite of his circumstances that Joseph is experiencing interacting with the divine. It's in the midst of his circumstances, in the full spectrum of life. He's in prison still. He is a prisoner. And this idea of it's not because his circumstances are great or only if his circumstances are great or only in some circumstances but not in others, but in the full spectrum of life, that idea takes me to a line from the poet Thomas Berry in his work, The Great Work, his book that say, nothing is itself without everything else. Nothing exists in isolation. It's a word we need today in a hyper-individualistic society where we can just get lost in our story, small story, and to go, oh, no. We are connected. Everything is connected, and it's not pulling it apart all the time. And this takes me to a portion of a poem that I have attached to my desk at home, that reads like this. Next slide. Now is the time to know that all that you do is sacred. This is the time for you to deeply compute the impossibility that there is anything but grace. Now is the season to know that everything you do is sacred. Hafez, 14th century Persian poet. What we are doing, it's not just the big things, it's all of the minutiae. It's all of life. It's connected in how you speak, what you do, all that you do has meaning, purpose. Hopefully we're peeling into that. So one of my big takeaways in studying the life of Joseph is the divine presence, what I would say, in the midst of liminal space. So liminal spaces, there are the mountaintop experiences. There even may be like the valleys, if you will. And we tend to remember these big things. And then there is this life in between. There is before we get there and while we've left here. And this is liminal space, is how it would be understood. So for Joseph, there are the mountaintop experiences of when Joseph is 17 years old. He's strutting around in his father's favor in the form of this colorful coat. And he is having these mystical dreams, these two dreams that say his 10 older brothers and his parents will bow down to him. Like he's like, Wow. So he has this mountaintop experience. Then we'll learn when he's 30 years old, Joseph then will see these dreams come to fruition. Again, mountaintop experience. Wow, here we are. And there is all the life that is in between that. 13 years of liminal space for Joseph. Liminal space, I would say, at least as it comes to mind, is kind of like the 9 months of being pregnant. I've not been pregnant, but I know. We have 3 boys. My wife was pregnant, and there is the being pregnant. There's the 9 months of being pregnant, the waiting, the discomfort, I've heard, which makes way for the miraculous birth, right? And we love to tell the story of the birth story. It's amazing. But it's all of the life in the liminal space that forges the character traits necessary for being a parent. Yes? Yeah, so that really matters. So with that, we're going to now dip into chapters 40 and 41. So a lot of work. Here we go. We'll begin with verse 1 through 3. Sometime after this, what we just read then, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker offended their lord, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was angry with his 2 officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and he put them in the custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison where Joseph was confined. So what I want to first do is set our timeline. Then we're going to reflect a little bit on Joseph and where he's at in this timeline. And then we're going to look at some details and some of these new characters that are going to help further shape our narrative. So our timeline is, we know in 2 years, Joseph will appear before Pharaoh at the age of 30. So that means he is 28 years old. I'm not great with math, but well done there. Yes, so he's 28 is what we'd be able to put together. So we know that for 11 years has passed since he was first sold into slavery. We don't know how many of those years he spent serving Potiphar and how many years he languished in prison, somehow in there, but it's a long time, yes? So now we're invited to kind of reflect with Joseph in the significant amount of time, these number of years in which he's already lived in exile from his home and from his family. That's 11 years of heartache, suffering, and the haunting questions of why me? Why this? And what's ahead in the midst of all this? All of these really, though, are instruments available for Joseph's maturation. We are not given any indication in the text that Joseph is bitter or jaded. So we get Joseph's story seems to be an endless education in the formation of character. Now, we'll jump into some of the new characters and some of the details that will shape things. We have the chief cupbearer. What that is a very important official in the Egyptian court because this person is a professional wine server. This is the person who brings the wine to Pharaoh. And that person needs to be above reproach because they are bringing the drink to Pharaoh. So they have the opportunity, they have ready access to the monarch that a lot of times if people were to try and assassinate a king, they do so by poisoning them. So he needs to protect this, guard this, be above reproach in bringing it. And more times than not, they would have to sample first to make sure. And imagine that. Sip, I'm alive. It's good for you to drink. Good job, huh? But this, so being this above reproach, needing this, and the proximity and the way in which they would interact with Pharaoh, the king, this made them a trusted advisor. Because they're right there sitting, holding a position of great influence by having Pharaoh's ear, if you will. This crucial relationship, I think, can comparatively be captured through the lens of Seinfeld, is where you all were thinking. In an episode called The Calzone, We have George Costanza, if you are not familiar, just George Costanza, a character in Seinfeld. He worked for the New York Yankees. He was the assistant to the traveling secretary. And George Steinbrenner is the owner of the Yankees at the time. And so George Steinbrenner's up here. George Costanza's down here. But in this episode, we will see that because of George having lunch and George Steinbrenner liking what George Costanza's having for lunch, all of a sudden something happens that is really just this story unfolding. And we're going to get there because Seinfeld pretty much can make sense of all of life. But we'll get there. But first, let's watch how this unfolds, because you need to be there in case you have not seen it. So let's take a picture of this. Hey.
Excellent, excellent little calzone you got there, Costanza. Okay, I'm a little jealous. All right, here we go. Like I told you last week, the renovation of the press box is taking too long. All right. Well, you know, that eggplant was very good. Very good. Everybody out. I got eggplant on my mind. Costanza, go get me a couple of calzones right now. Pronto, move it out. Bickstein wants an eggplant calzone. He must have one. Everybody out. Hurry up. This calzone is fantastic. And look, no dripping. The pita pocket prevents it from dripping. The pita pocket. Yeah, what is it, Watson? A lost and found, huh? No, I don't think we need that. If people can't hold on to things, that's their tough luck. You got a little junk on your lip there, by the way.
You know, a lost and found could be a good idea.
Hold on, Watson. You like a lost and found, George?
Definitely.
Hmm. All right, a lost and found. But there's got to be some kind of time limit. We're not running a pawn shop here.
I'm like a drug dealer. I got the guy hooked. I'm having lunch at his desk every day this week, just him and me. He doesn't make a move without me. It's very exciting.
Here you go. Very good.
Yeah. See? Do you see? It's just right there. George is right next to the other George, and now he's not going to make any decisions without Costanza there. Oh, as Jerry said, the piece of the puzzle is finally in place. I just think, to me, I mean, this clicks because that's the way my mind works, but reality says, what can't we make sense of the world with Seinfeld? And so I was thinking, Andrew, you've written some books on Walt Disney. I think a side project would be we could partner up and we could do the Bible according to Seinfeld. Doesn't that sound like a great idea? And I'm just saying, I think it works. I like it. All right, let's move on. So verse 4, the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, that is the wine, the cupbearer, and the baker, and he, Joseph, waited on them. And they continued for some time in his custody. Now understand it contextually, for some time likely would mean a year, because it's from birthday to birthday, as we'll see in Pharaoh's life, from one birthday to the next where he gets offended. We don't even know why he was offended with them and sent him to prison. But this some time in his custody, like a year. Verse 5. One night, they both dreamed, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in prison, each his own dream, and each dream with its own meaning. When Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they were troubled. So he asked Pharaoh's officers, who were with him in custody in his master's house, why are your faces downcast today? Last week I mentioned that I would say success for the church is to live out the fruit of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. When we as the church embody that and live that out, I would say is success. And we see Joseph here paying attention to the troubles of the cupbearer and the baker. Highlight this idea of modeling this. Notice that Joseph is in prison. He isn't sulking. He isn't complaining about his imprisonment. He instead, what he's not doing is he's not going through the motions of serving these people. He is attentive to those in his care. It is a gift and a teacher to see that he doesn't see this as, ugh. Instead, he's like, I have this responsibility, and he takes it very seriously, and he pays attention to those in his care. Verse 9, they said to him, we have had dreams, and there is no one to interpret them. And Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me. So Joseph makes clear that interpretations belong to God, but he also recognizes that it will take place through him. It's this fantastic blend of humility and boldness, right, that Joseph has here. Verse 9 through 19, so a chunk of text now. So the chief cupbearer told his dreams to Joseph and said to him, in my dream there was a vine before me. And on the vine were three branches. As soon as it budded, its blossoms came out, and the clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. Then Joseph said to him, this is its interpretation. The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand, just as you used to do when you were his cupbearer. But remember me when it is well with you. Please do me the kindness to make mention of me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this place. Joseph, here in this moment, has in the experience of hope. Hope. Could it be, remember me when all goes well and I might get out of this? Next, in fact, I was stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that they should put me into the dungeon. And I'm innocent, and I've been here, so if you can remember me and I can get out, that'd be great. Next slide. When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was favorable, he said to Joseph, I also had a dream. There were three cake baskets on my head, and in the uppermost basket there were all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh. But the birds were eating it out of the basket on my head. And Joseph answered, this is its interpretation. The three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and hang you on a pole, and the birds will eat the flesh from you. Whoops. Like, this is a case of, I'm sorry I asked. Can we have a do-over? Right? Like, that went really well for the cupbearer, and all of a sudden the thing just falls off the table. Yeah, 3 days, and your head lifted up off your body. Yikes. Now, there's a lot here, but one thing is the theological beliefs of the Egyptians motivated them to pay attention to the preservation of the body after death. So the punishment that he gets, it's not just like that's bad, but also it's particularly devastating because it's like, wow, not only will I die, but it's going to be brutal and take me apart literally. So now let's go to the actual outcome. Joseph gave these interpretations. Now let's see where this goes. Verse 20. On the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, see how this aligns, he made a feast for all his servants and lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his cup bearing, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand, but the chief baker, he hanged, just as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Oh. The Hebrew language here behind the cupbearer not remembering has further depth because it means a complete forgetfulness. This forgetfulness of the cupbearer prefigures, and this is fascinating, the later national experience of the Israelites when they're enslaved in Egypt. Their time asking, will anyone remember us while we are in slavery? Can anyone hear our cry in suffering while we are in enslavement? You see this here, forgotten, forgotten. It's kind of an additional gut punch to the Hebrew people while remembering their larger story when they're in this. Next verse, we're now on to chapter 41. So we'll move on now, chapter 41, where we get to meet Pharaoh a bit more. After two whole years, that's two more years that Joseph is unjustly just in prison. Two more years. Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile. You want to circle that? And there came up out of the Nile seven sleek and fat cows, and they grazed in the reed grass. Then seven other cows, ugly and thin, these details are going to be really important, came up out of the Nile after them and stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. The ugly and thin cows ate up the seven sleek and fat cows, and Pharaoh awoke. Then he fell asleep and dreamed a second time. Seven ears of grain, plump and good, were growing on one stalk. Then seven ears, thin and blighted by the east wind, sprouted after them. The thin ears swallowed up the seven plump and full ears. Pharaoh awoke, and it was a dream. In the morning, his spirit was troubled. So he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them to Pharaoh. They tried. He just was not pleased with what they had to say. Now, we have to remember, in the ancient world, they took dreams very seriously. We learned that initially at the beginning of Joseph's story when he had his dreams about people bowing down to him, his family and stuff. They didn't go, notice when he told it, a 7-year-old, when he told his dreams, they didn't respond with, ah, you and your weird dreams, you had something bad to eat the night before, don't tell us that. Instead, they were like, whoa. They pay attention to him. It meant something. So they took it very seriously. So that's going on here. Now, in this dream, the Nile River is a really key component because contextually it carries a lot of meaning. The Nile River was literally the lifeline of Egypt, and it was the source of its entire economy. This plays in part because Pharaoh's anxiety and stress then isn't because he's like, this dream isn't about me, this dream is about our nation. So this is a big deal. So he's like, whoa, that adds to the stress. Secondly, the two groups of cows. There are plump, sleek cows, okay? So they'll hang out by Pharaoh. And then we have some thin, ugly cows staring at them. Hi. We'll put them on the board too, some new characters. Now, the two groups of cows are described in very specific ways, which will factor in when the dreams are being interpreted. So let's hang on to that. Third, due to time this morning, we have to wrap it up at some point. We're going to now read snippets of the rest of the story just to capture a summary of how this all unfolds. Are you with me? All right, we'll kind of move this along. We'll begin with verse 9. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, I remember. Oh, now all of a sudden when he's like, no one's telling him his dreams, right? I remember my faults today. Me and the baker had dreams while we were in prison. A young Hebrew was there with us. When we told him our dreams, he interpreted them to us. As he interpreted, so it turned out. Then Pharaoh sent for Joseph. When Joseph had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came in before Pharaoh. Real quick, the shaving would be of both head and face because it's connected to Egyptian hygiene standards. A shaved head was understood as a sign of cleanliness for them. I'm all on board. I'm 1/8 Egyptian. Something like that. Now, as for Joseph changing his clothes here, clothes have been a constant factor in Joseph's misfortunes, correct? So his father's fancy coat causing jealousy with his brothers. Then he had another coat that was left in the hands of Potiphar's wife. So this clothing change can carry a symbolic meaning as the process of Joseph's liberation is now beginning. Fresh clothes. Kind of lovely. Verse 15 and 16. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Joseph answered Pharaoh, it is not I. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. Again, the interpretation belongs to God, yet it will unfold through Joseph. So let's see how it unfolds. Next slide. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. There will come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt. After them there will arise 7 years of famine, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. The famine will consume the land. Now therefore, let Pharaoh select a man who is discerning and wise and set him over the land of Egypt. The proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find anyone else like this, one in whom is the Spirit of God? Next slide. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has shown you all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only with regard to the throne will I be greater than you. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no one shall lift up hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh gave Joseph the name Zaphnath-Paneah. Egyptian scholars translate it Savior of the Age. Hebrew scholars translate it Revealer of a Secret. You see how their theologies come into play there. Interesting. And he gave him Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, as his wife. Thus Joseph gained authority over the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. When all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, go to Joseph, what he says to you, do. Moreover, all the world came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain, because the famine became so severe throughout the whole world. Well, this has become a global famine. Now, in this is a lot to take in, notice that God speaks to all people. The cupbearer, baker, Pharaoh, and Joseph have all had dreams, correct? But only Joseph seems to hear the voice of God, which raises the question, is Joseph more holy or special than everyone else? Anyone, when we read these things and you're like, that's amazing, how come I don't get that? How come I can't put that to, we immediately, well, is he special? Is he, what's going on here? Is there something about Joseph? Here's the key. Is there something about Joseph's story, his lived experience, that helps him make sense of Pharaoh's dreams? Now, if you are asleep, please wake up. I want you to lean in and buckle up, because now we get into lots of fun. Are you with me?
Yes.
Here we go. Get this. The Hebrew phrase used to describe the seven healthy cows, yafeh mar'eh, is also the phrase used to describe two people in Torah, Rachel and Joseph. Rachel is Joseph's mom. They were described in this way, their attractiveness, if you will. This is the only people in Torah described in this way. That's our first woe. Then we read that the healthy cows were grazing in the reed grass near other cows. But the Hebrew language interpreted as reed grass is not used anywhere else in Torah. So there is some guesswork around this. Modern scholars use swamp or river or reed grass. But earlier Hebrew scholars interpret it as near brother cows, how it would read. The word for grazing only means that in the Hebrew when speaking about animals. But if you're speaking, if the subject is people, then the word for grazing can mean shepherding. So earlier scholars interpret this as shepherding near brother cows. Shepherding near brothers, did that happen? Hopefully your dashboard is blinking. Chapter 37, Joseph goes to visit because his dad said, go to your brothers who are shepherding and grazing the flock in Shechem, right? Go there near them and talk to them. So we see this going. Now the Hebrew phrase describing these brother cows as ugly and thin, that phrase also shows up earlier in the Genesis story. Six of Joseph's older brothers were born to Rachel's sister Leah, who is described as having weak eyes or thin eyes. Yep, it's the same Hebrew phrase. So what you have in this story are Rachel cows and Leah cows. And I would suggest not calling your mom a cow if you're Joseph. But in this, you see what's happening already, how it's unfolding. You have Rachel cows and Leah cows. Now we have the issue of the number seven. How many years did Jacob initially work for his uncle Laban in order to marry Rachel? Seven. And he did, but then at the wedding ceremony, too much to drink, really dark in the tent, he wakes up the next morning and it says, and there was Leah, right? He got duped into marrying Leah. So then he goes to Laban and he then says he will work, what? Another 7 years in order to marry Rachel. There's your 7 years is what's going on here. Joseph then, think about this. Joseph is not hearing a dream when Pharaoh's explaining to him. He is seeing his life flash before his eyes. Are you with me? Hoo-wee. He's like, oh, because then what happens? The Leah cows devour the Rachel cows, just like the brothers devoured Joseph and tossed him into a pit and then sold him into slavery. Are you with me? In this story, God is speaking to several people, the cupbearer, the baker, Pharaoh, and Joseph, but it's Joseph who is attentive to his lived experience and so discerns the voice of God. Rather than being stuck in bitterness for why his life is not the way he wants or thinks it should be, he is attentive to all his life, good circumstances or bad. He is paying attention and saying, what is my life teaching me in this? Please don't miss this. Joseph hears God's voice by paying attention to the patterns in his life. Joseph is picking up on God's voice from out of his life, from out of his lived experience. God is not distant or somewhere else in this story, and God is not just speaking to the special holy people, but Joseph is paying attention, listening to the entirety of his life, ups, downs, and the in-between, the liminal space. We don't read in the story of God sending an angel to tell Joseph, here's the meaning of the dreams. We don't see Joseph get his cereal out in the morning and it's alphabet cereal and there it spelled it out. Here's the thing. He didn't have that. And we're not told of a booming voice from heaven saying, here's your interpretation, Joseph. It's the voice of God, apparently. We have Joseph paying attention and connecting the dots of his life. Joseph is alert to his life's story and sees a pattern. We call it discernment and wisdom, but it's all rooted to listening to his life and listening to the divine in his life. Are you with me? Also, we now see in the story that his dreams are not about hierarchy and ego. It's not, oh, Joseph's on top and others are below him. It's not about weakness bowing down to power. It's power in place for the care and provision of those who are in need. Oh, that's a different story, right? Joseph is not stuck in thinking his life should be on top of the world. Joseph is learning how all of life, the ups and downs and in-betweens, are inviting him to be a help in the world. Joseph is paying attention to the minutiae rather than trying to get through it, get over it, or bypass it. He's paying attention to it. Which takes me to zooming out further. What I want to do is some of the things that have just been kind of rattling around in me and walking through the story, being in the story, studying the story, contextually on the larger scope of the story, what else is happening within this story, or how are some other clouds being tied together? This comes from the tension of how the story reveals that Joseph clearly has what we've used the word yeda, is the Hebrew word, a knowing of God, but it's an intimate connection. Yeda is an intimate, experiential knowing of that. So there's a tension, and Joseph has this connection, yet his life does not read as a 12 simple steps devotional, explaining exactly what to do and when to do it. It's not there. There's a tension there. So although Joseph's story is fantastic literature, for us modern Western folk, it can feel a bit abstract, mystical, and incomprehensible. It might not seem practical, which is true of much of the book of Genesis and Exodus, for that matter, which is why, and this is contextually why it's so helpful, traditionally, the structure for teaching Jewish kids, education for Jewish kids, begins with the book of Leviticus, your favorite book of the Bible. Leviticus, because, just here are some things. In Hebrew, the book of Leviticus is named for its opening word, Vayikra, taken from the opening words, and God called Moses. And it says, and God called. It's the word Vayikra in Hebrew. Now, the last letter in Hebrew is Aleph. That's a letter. That's the first letter in the Hebrew alphabet, Aleph, which is written when they wrote it, and still today when they write and copy, they write the letter a little bit smaller than all the other letters. One interpretation, which I think makes tons of sense, is because the book of Leviticus deals with the smallest details of life and worship. We see this, though, right? It is like us modern folk, we go, yeah, Leviticus is brutal in its endless details of the sacrifices and all these kooky laws and all of the details, which is kind of the point. Leviticus is taught first because it is concrete and it's excruciating in details for the actions of life with God. Generally speaking, when you're teaching kids for implementation and obedience, do you want to teach them in the abstract or in the concrete? Where do you begin? Just with the details, concrete. Let's walk this out, then we'll expand. So you begin with the brain-melting details of Leviticus, then you slide into the narrative that defines the Hebrew people, Exodus, which raises the question, well, how did we get into these circumstances, which they would say, well, in the beginning, there's a movement there. So the details, then the narrative, so that you will see the details in the narrative. Are you with me? This makes sense. Which then had me thinking about a very key word in the Hebrew scriptures that hovers over the biblical narrative. We know that word as holy. But in the Hebrew, it's the word kadosh. Go ahead and say kadosh. Kadosh. It means to be set apart, to make a distinction. And it's really important to see that holiness is not hierarchical. So because we have a very problematic phrase in our culture called holier than thou. It's not about being above. It's just about making a distinction, being set apart and making distinction, which is very different. To get at this, there's a weekly Jewish prayer service called Shabbat. It's around Sabbath, it's on Sabbath, which makes a distinction of how we are to interact with time. We set aside certain time for rest, for renewal, for worship. Within the Shabbat service, the congregation recites the Amidah prayer, which includes saying, Kadosh, 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 holy, holy, holy. Now here's the thing. Each time the congregation says holy, they raise up on their tippy toes. Holy, holy, holy. The whole reason is to do a physical posture, to do symbolic movement, to give me a new, fresh, different, distinct perspective. So they're acting it out. They're saying we do this in order to see something new in the midst of the ordinary and everyday. Are you with me? Which takes us back to Joseph. We do not read of him praying to get out of his unfortunate and wildly uncomfortable circumstances. He just continues in his connection with the divine and taking the next right step in the midst of his circumstances. I find this really crucial when asking the questions, is God still present today the way God was present to Joseph? And does God still speak today the way God seems to have spoken to Joseph? Throughout the story, we do not have a distracted or demanding Joseph. We find him connected, present, patient, and faithfully working within his circumstances, whether they are pleasant or parched. For Joseph, God isn't only found on the other side of his circumstances or found only if his circumstances are acceptable. Joseph is paying attention to the divine in all of life, including and maybe even most clearly in the in-between, the ordinary details of life. I can hear the echo of Jesus calling to everyone in earshot, come, follow me, which Jesus never says, if you have a prescribed amount of time, if you have a certain amount of money, if you have a certain amount of education, follow me. Follow me even in this, as you are, right where you are, in all of this. Why do we find such attentiveness so challenging? Because our society is loud, it's fast, it's nonstop, and it's begging us to make up ideas like multitasking. Rather than quiet, slow, calm, patient, and present. Being present can help us pick up on patterns. Are you with me? We often, and I'll say it this way, we often live with an if-then, when-then philosophy. Next slide. If I get that job and salary, then I can be generous. When I've been at the job for 5, 10, 25 years, then I can slow down. When the kids are in school, then we'll have time. If I get that house, car, boat, clothing item, then I'll be content. All the while, we're frantically working, rushing, making, building, buying, and dreaming about if, when, then. I'll say it like this. Joseph's story, next slide. Joseph's story invites us to be present to the here and now, which can alert us to the there and then, and into the patterns of our lives. Oh. I slow down, I pay attention, I see this, and I'm like, oh, I see, I've seen this before. Sometimes we even call this thing, we call it a deja vu. I feel like I've been here before. I feel like I've done this before. I feel like I've been in this before, right? Because you're paying attention. We're stopping and we're thinking, Where has this happened in my life before? When we slow down, well, this is such good news. We don't have Joseph, the super, special guy downloaded from God. Here it all is. Joseph hears a dream and goes, hokey smokes. Sweet, fancy Moses. I know this story. I see this in my life. Get ready, Pharaoh. Something is about to unfold. And if we're paying attention and we work this, then we will provide for. We will. He's just paying attention to the patterns of his life. I had lunch a few days ago with some friends. One of the friends who was sitting there, she says, oh, I love this idea of patterns. Because shockingly, at some point, we started to talk about Joseph. Because I give the message 600 times before I get to Sunday. Because it comes up in conversation. We started talking. And she's, oh, patterns. And I'm like, oh, patterns. You do Joseph. And she's like, oh, here we go. And she says, I actually ask people to write down patterns in their life. We'll start talking and I'll just say to them, could we stop and could you write down some patterns you have seen in your life? I said, that is gold. That is great. Just pause, sit back and go, what are some patterns I've seen in my life? Why is it that I have seemed to have 500 jobs and they've all ended the same way? Is there some dots to be connected there? In my relationships, my goodness, they've been different people, but seemingly the same thing has happened over and over again. Is there a pattern there? What in this could I be paying attention to in my life? May you have eyes to see and ears to hear that all of life is baked with grace and meaning and purpose and opportunity and goodness and growth. When we pause, when we are present, when we are paying attention, we are listening and we're looking for the patterns that are unfolding right within us and among us. And when we see this, may you come to see the God who is speaking to you, whispering, shouting, yelling, however it may be. May you come to hear that voice within life that is inviting you to see the patterns, to see the movements, to see the opportunity, to grow, to love, to give, to serve, to be present here now for the more of life. Gracious God, I bless you for this invitation, for the way this story it so stunningly unfolds, so beautifully invites us to slow down, to pay attention, to not try and skip over life, especially just try and skip over the things we don't like. God, help us to pay attention to all of life. To be present even in this. God, give us ears to hear, that we would have our ears open, our eyes open, our hearts willing to see and listen to what is unfolding, to the invitation before us. As you are with us, may we be with you in all of life. We pray this in the name of Christ. Amen.